Hello, welcome to Illinois Radio Reader. This is Lisa with the News Gazette, dated July 16th, 2025. Today on the front page is a very large picture, front and center, of a tree with a sign taped to it with the title Community Safety Alert. This is from the city of Urbana, and it's titled Neighborhood Watchful in bold print. Residents urged to keep an eye out for suspicious behavior following a spate of attempted break-ins by Luke Taylor. After he was woken up early in the morning to an unknown person apparently attempting to enter his house on High Street, an Urbana man turned to his community. Soon he learned that he wasn't the only one worried about safety in his area. "I've lived here for 4 years. I've talked to other neighbors who've lived here," said David Malify. "There are things occasionally, like mail thefts, opportunistic stuff, theft of stuff in cars, but this is just a whole nother level." After confronting the unknown person at his door by banging on the inside and shouting at them, Malify called the police. Urbana police officers checked the area and let him know that it was clear. But Malify was unsettled by the incident. In the following days, he spoke about it with his neighbors and learned of concerning incidents at homes and apartment buildings nearby. More break-ins, package thefts, and people looking through windows for extended periods of time. Wondering if there was a legitimate pattern emerging, Malify placed flyers around a few blocks of Green, Elm, and High Streets, asking that people let him know of any similar incidents. A few replies did come in, including reports of apparent attempted break-ins, in which residents were clearly home, which particularly concerned Malify. However, he learned that since many of these incidents seemed minor on their own, residents hadn't reported all of them to police. Malify placed another round of flyers, encouraging his neighbors to do so, and suggesting that they keep an eye out for anything strange. "I try to be an ethical human being. If I'm living in the neighborhood, I want to know that people are testing doors at 2 a.m., he said. Urbana Police Chief Larry D. Boone said there have been several reports of suspicious activity in the area of Green, High, and Elm Streets between Busey Avenue and Cedar Street since June 1st. These reports included June 14th, a black man peeking into a residence on Elm and an unknown individual jiggling a door handle on Green. On June 30th, a 60-year-old white woman ringing doorbells and asking for donations, claiming her daughter had been in an accident. On July 3rd, a resident reported suspicious behavior, stating that individuals appeared to be attempting to open doors to various residents. And July 8th, the same report was made in a similar residence. July 14th, a squatter was located at the active construction site of a new coffee shop on Green Street, which Boone said was just outside the immediate area of concern. Boone said there have been no calls or reports of theft in the area in that time. He advised that anyone who lives in the area and is concerned about these incidents to keep their doors and windows locked, even while they are at home, and decline to open the door to anyone unfamiliar if their identity and purpose cannot be verified. Any suspicious activity should be reported immediately, with its detailed description as possible. Avoid confronting individuals yourself. Instead, let law enforcement investigate, Boone said. Even if a person's behavior doesn't appear criminal, repeated presence in the area, especially around homes or construction sites, should still be reported to help establish patterns. Boone said that the residents stay alert and continue to communicate with their neighbors as well as with the police department. At the top of the front page, there's a picture of some gentlemen, and it is the Lions Club members, Earl Smith, Jim Cleary, Don Wilson, Rodney Bergen, and President Curtis Johnson, as they visit the Newtown Park in Gifford on July 9th. The article is under sequicentennial, and this is by Dave Hinton, with the title Gifford Marking 150th Year with a Weekend Celebration. The Budweiser Clydesdales were a main attraction in Gifford Centennial Celebration Parade in 1975. Clydesdales, although not the ones owned by Anheuser-Busch, will be there in abundance when Gifford holds its 150th anniversary celebration parade, starting at 10 a.m. Saturday. One pair of the draught horses, owned by J.F.P. Equine and Company of Waterloo, will pull the carriage containing Grand Marshal Earl Smith as the parade heads down Main Street. Another six-horse team driven by Austin Banga of New Haven, Indiana, will also take part in the parade. Banga, a horse trainer, farrier, and exhibitor, is a son of Gordyville, USA General Manager Lisa Banga Graham. The Clydesdales also are scheduled to appear Friday at the Iroquois County Fair and Sunday at the Champaign County Fair. The horses are owned by a family from Michigan. It is perhaps only fitting that a draught team owned by a beer company appeared in the Centennial Parade 50 years ago. Back in the 1800s, Gifford was settled by Germans, well known for their love of beer. One longtime resident said that at one time the small town was home to four taverns. Most of the festivities celebrating the sesquicentennial are set for Friday night and Saturday, capped by the community church service Sunday at Werner Ressler Park. A full list of events can be found online. German roots. St. Paul Lutheran Church pastor Gary Marshall said there is little evidence today of Gifford's early German influence. It's kind of faded, Maxwell said. There used to be German-speaking services. They would do German services and then English-speaking services and then later an English-only service. The brick church does retain a cornerstone with German writing. There is also a display case of all the old hymnals and Bibles written in German. Perhaps the only other reference to the town's European roots is the name of the German Fall Festival building, also known as the Community Building, located at a site that years ago housed a John Deere dealership. An estimated 90% of the town's population was of German descent, prompting community leaders in 1972 to hold a German Fall Festival, according to Izzy Sauer's chronicle of the community for the Champaign County Historical Society. That first festival included traditional song and dance performances by professional groups and drew an estimated 4,000 visitors. By 1974, the festival attracted some 20,000 to the town. It also attracted something more. Some Gifford residents complained about drunken behavior by festival goers. That led police to recommend residents bring their children indoors during the late hours. The village board then canceled further German festivals. Some good did come out of the celebrations, according to Smith. Enough money was raised for the purchase and startup of the Fall Festival building, which remains a central location for many Gifford activities. The 70-year-old Smith, who serves as sesquicentennial chairman, is a Gifford native. After a 20-year career in the funeral business in Illinois and Florida, Smith returned to Gifford and has served as the multi-township assessor for Northeast Champaign since 1997. Smith is a widower. His wife, Roberta Burt Smith, passed away in 2012. As the Grand Marshal, he'll be in his element heading down Main Street in a horse-drawn carriage. He said he plans to buy about $100 worth of candy to hand out. A changed community. It was 1875 when Benjamin J. Gifford founded the community. Henry Flessner, who was the first postmaster, built the first house. At one time, there were four churches in Gifford. The town, whose volunteer fire department formed in 1947, was incorporated as a village 7 years later. In November of 2013, a rain-wrapped tornado about 1/2 mile wide moved through the town, destroying nearly 30 homes, causing major damage to about 40 homes, and another 125 homes had minor damage. No one was killed. The destruction resulted in the building of a number of new homes. County Health Nursing Home opened in 1970 and has expanded to include a senior apartment living facility. One of the residents of the apartment complex is 96-year-old Mary Burr, who had lived with her husband Wilbert on a farm north of Gifford beginning in 1950. With her son Arlen, Marie talked about life in the community whose population has been around 900 people in recent decades. In her mid-teens, she worked at Peck's Grocery, which later became Bus Booms. Gifford has been without a grocery store for many years. After the grocery store closed, Casey's came in, Arlen Burr said. The town also has a Dollar General. Gifford is very fortunate to have the community involvement through the years, Marie said. Numerous businesses have come and gone. The tornado brought us even closer together. Gifford Grade School has been a mainstay, and Arlen is a former member of the school board and village board. In early days, the baseball diamond was the place to be on a Sunday afternoon to watch the Gifford Flatville EI team play. That was the form of entertainment, going to the ball games, Arlen said. We also always looked forward to the Champaign County Fair. The Gifford Flats, founded in 1933, remained a strong entry until the team folded after the 21 season. In 2022, the News Gazette story, former Gifford Village President Daryl Ackerman said Gifford Flatville games were a big deal at one time. Every Sunday afternoon, especially a few years back when you had all those other teams involved, big crowds would show up, Ackerman said. Royal played there too, and now Royal has their own new diamond, just west of St. Joseph. The old ball diamond has since been plowed under, now a field farmed by a son and his grandson of 87-year-old John Emkes, who said he still lives in the family farm outside Gifford Emkes. Outside of Gifford, Emkes laments that most of the businesses from long ago are gone. I can remember the day that the parking spaces in downtown Gifford were all taken, he said. Now it's just sad. Some of the best times we had as kids were here at the free movies downtown. That was like every Friday or Saturday night. I guess the town businesses paid for it. They'd block off the streets, then people would head for the restaurant and have an ice cream or whatever. Emkes said in years past people were more inclined to come to visit their neighbor. Now it's so diverse, you don't know anybody, Emkes said. It's kind of a bedroom town, and it's not a bedroom town anymore. Still, Emkes, who comes into town every afternoon to visit his wife Norma, who is a resident at the nursing home, said the people he knows in Gifford will help you do anything you ask them to do. The friendliness of the town is a strong suit, he said. I think the church, St. Paul's, kind of backs that up. They have a super good food pantry and food giveaway at least once a month. A lot of people turn out to work at that. Kathy Wilkin, who also remembers the movies downtown, said children growing up in Gifford had a very quiet and sheltered life. We never had any problems from anybody, adding that her family got running water in the house in the early 50s. Before that, they had a well, and later, indoor plumbing to replace their outhouse. The town didn't have much but four bars at that time, the post office, a grocery store, a really nice jewelry store. We had a car dealership by the hardware store. There was a shoe repair place and a little gas station right across from the Gifford Community Building now. And there's a picture of St. Paul's Lutheran Church in Gifford, and that it says that it was exclusively in German. They gradually transitioned to both German and English services before eventually becoming English only. And another picture of the Gifford State Bank as it appeared in decades past and what it looks like now. Very similar. Sorry, it is not similar at all. I didn't see the picture. It is quite different. The State Bank now has formidable pillars and made of brick. And in the past, it was quite small. Also pictured at the bottom is Earl Smith, and he will be the Grand Marshal of Saturday's sesquicentennial parade in Gifford. At the bottom of the front page is an article from Champaign about the development. Entrepreneur pauses plan for indoor pickleball club by Jana Wiersema. Plans for a 24-hour indoor pickleball facility has been shelved, at least for the time being. Tim Montague, general manager of CU Pickleball Club, shared Friday that he has made the tough decision to pause the CUPC project for now. "I'm very sad today to let you all know that the CUPC is not happening," he said in a video announcement sent to the club's mailing list. "Not in this current permutation, anyway. I've had a variety of funders who've come to the table, but backed out, and I don't have the wherewithal to drive the project forward at this time." Montague's plans had garnered a lot of public interest. He previously told the News Gazette in February that nearly 300 people had signed up to be notified once early bird memberships went on sale. "Even though things aren't moving forward at the moment, I'm still committed to growing the pickleball community here in Champaign," Montague wrote in an e-newsletter. "I'll definitely keep you updated if and when things change. While the CU Pickleball Club may be on pause, the Champaign Park District is moving forward with plans to expand its John Street Pickleball Complex. More information about project concepts and a form for public input is available at champaignparks.org/John Street Pickleball Complex-expansion. At the bottom of the front page is a picture of a little one running through a tunnel of girls. Colleen Horner runs through a tunnel of University of Illinois volleyball players on her way to home plate during Tuesday's Tom Jones Challenger League annual All-Star Game at Eckelberger Field in Urbana. It was Colleen's birthday, and she was serenaded by League Commissioner Tom Gray before she batted. Nearly 100 volunteers from various U of I sports teams, in addition to parents, coaches, and others, turned out Tuesday to make the day a memorable affair for all involved. And there are some added pictures in the photo gallery in Section A8. Let's now check in with J. Mark Powell in his Holy Cow History article. And in that article, there's pictures from 1862 carte de visite photo of John Wilkes Booth, who was, of course, the assassin of President Abraham Lincoln. And there are 5 similar ones that were found on him when he was fatally shot 12 days after the assassination. And there's a picture of women in these old-fashioned carte de visite photos: Effie German, Alice Gray, Lucy Hale, and Helen Western. And a woman unknown to investigators at the time who simply dubbed her the Mysterious Beauty. And the title of this opinion piece is, "Who Was John Wilkes Booth's Mysterious Beauty?" On Good Friday, 1865, a man entered his room in the National Hotel in Washington, D.C. He'd be leaving on a one-way trip in a few hours. He filled one pocket with things you'd expect: a ring of things, a ring of keys, a compass, a day book he used for a diary, even a whistle in case he got lost in the woods. In others, he placed a knife and a single-shot Derringer pistol. Before he could depart, he had to stop at Ford's Theater. Tucked inside the daybook were photos of 5 women. The identity of one was lost for decades. When her name finally became known, it was raising questions. This is the story of John Wilkes Booth's Mysterious Beauty. Any schoolchild can tell you, an actor shot Abraham Lincoln on April 14, 1865. While true, there's more to it than that. Booth was more than an actor. He was a big star. It was a celebrity-on-celebrity crime. Booth's plan was astonishingly simple. Shoot Lincoln from behind, leap to the stage, hop on a horse waiting in the alley behind the theater, and ride for the South, which explains why he packed light. Booth was tracked down and shot in rural Virginia 12 days later. The contents of his pockets were rushed to Secretary of War Edwin Stanton. Their existence was made public 2 years later when Stanton released a statement mentioning the diary and photos of several females. Then they were boxed up and hidden from view. The first newspaper account came in 1884, casually mentioning photographs of young women, presumably actresses. In 1891, another journalist In 1891, another journalist got a closer look at Booth's belongings. He tried to identify each woman by name in his report. The most prominent was Lucy Hale, who was 24 years old in 1865 and a favorite among Washington's wartime bachelors. The article of a 1970 American Heritage article perfectly describes her social life. They all loved Lucy. Although she was what some might call stout, she was also vivacious, chatty, and as daughter of a New Hampshire Senator John Hale, connected to the upper rungs of Washington's political society. Lincoln's personal secretary and future Secretary of State John Hay, future Supreme Court Justice Oliver Wendell Holmes, Jr., and even the president's eldest son, Robert Todd Lincoln, all courted her. Also among her suitors, the dashing Booth. In fact, Lucy had secured his ticket to Lincoln's second inauguration weeks earlier. There's an enduring claim based on scant historical evidence that Lucy and Booth were secretly engaged to marry. Booth used anyone who could help him advance his schemes. He likely made Lucy believe that they were engaged. Otherwise, why did he carry pictures of three other women on a trip that he knew might end in his death? The second photo was Effie Gurman, an actress who, on the night of Lincoln's assassination, starred in Aladdin or The Wonderful Lamp at Washington's other major theater, where Lincoln's youngest son, Tad, was watching. In that 1891 article, the reporter cruelly reported that Miss Gurman is still living, is now an old woman, and, as they say, she is fat. The third image was of Alice Gray. According to the Lincoln Financial Foundation collection, she appeared as Juliet, opposite Booth as Romeo, in 1863 in Baltimore, and by 1865 she was a leading lady in the company at Ford's Theater. She was not at the theater on the night of Lincoln's assassination. The fourth photo was Helen Western, another actress, who also appeared as Juliet to Booth's Romeo in 1861, according to the Foundation. However, it was the fifth photo that left investigators stumped. Although the woman was stunningly lovely, they never did learn her name. At some point, someone wrote in pencil beneath her image, "The Mysterious Beauty." By the 1930s, those words had been erased, though traces are still visible. So, who was she? Sometime in the early 20th century, she was finally identified. Her name was Fanny Brown, another actress who, while not as famous as Booth, was well known in her day. Indeed, the New York Clipper newspaper printed the following in its celebrity section on November 28, 1863. Rumor says that J. Wilkes Booth will shortly lead to the hymeneal marriage altar, the beautiful and fascinating Fanny Brown. Where's Dolly? While word of a possible Booth wedding was serious enough to make it into print, the second line mentioning a different woman also reveals that Booth was a ladies' man. He was catnip to women who practically lined up to surrender their hearts to him. Exactly what did each woman mean to him? We'll never know. Booth took the answer to the grave with him. All five photos are displayed in the Ford's Theater Museum. They silently stare at us from the 19th century, keeping historians guessing about the role each played in the life of one of America's greatest villains. Continuing on with some more community news from Champaign about the utility rates, Champaign suspends Municipal Electric Aggregation Program for another year. By Jan Wiersema. The city's municipal electric aggregation program will remain suspended for about another year. Champaign officials announced Tuesday that the program, which was suspended in July of 2024, will be reassessed in the spring of 2026. Staff attempted to reinstate the program this summer, but found after four tries that Ameren's rate is expected to be lower than the best offer the city received. This does not mean the city's MEA program has been terminated, officials said. In the future, if the city can secure a contract for competitive electricity supply at a rate lower than Ameren's expected supply rate, the city's program can be reinstated. Customers' options include staying with Ameren, choosing another supplier, or subscribing to a community solar program. And for more information, you can go to champaignillinois.gov. On this same page, in Section A11, an article from Danville by Jennifer Bailey. Officials report worrisome snag in plans. City officials reported a utility snag that could derail the planned Casey's Truck Stop, Danville's third cannabis dispensary, and another development on farmland south of the Lynch Road exit on Interstate 74. A year after the City Council approved the development, Ward 6 Alderman John Cooper asked city officials at Tuesday's meeting for an update. Community Development Administrator Logan Cronk said, as far as he can determine, there is a snag between the utility upgrades of gas and electrical being provided to the site. It has to do with capacity. Ameren's willingness to provide up to capacity for what could potentially be a 6-lot subdivision. So that's been kind of a snag of the whole development, Cronk said. He added that there's not much the city can do to push it along. It appears to be between the utility company and the private developers, Cronk said. It is worrisome. Mayor Ricky Williams Jr. said he has reached out to Ameren and is awaiting a response. Cronk said there are two options to bring in utilities, from the north or south, and either way, there would be a bridge to deal with, complicating matters. Cronk said it's unlikely the project will be finished this year. And also from Danville, about the school board, vote to appoint new member expected tonight. A field of 11 applicants will be whittled down to one appointee at tonight's Danville School Board meeting. The Reverend Thomas Miller's decision to step down after 10 years on the board created the opening, for which three finalists were interviewed. The new board member would serve through May 12th of 2027. Board President Darlene Halloran said, all of the applicants were very good, but not all wanted to move on to the interview stage of the process. Halloran declined to name the board's choice, given that members will vote on the appointment during open session that meeting. Halloran said the board is also expected to act on new Superintendent John Hart's contract. Hart, who was appointed interim superintendent in February following Alicia Geddes' exit, was named permanent superintendent in June, which Halloran said caught some by surprise. We wanted him to do this all along. Let's go to an article under Capital News, Illinois, by Andrew Adams. Trump policies likely to impact Illinois solar wager. President Donald Trump and congressional Republicans earlier this month curtailed federal tax incentives for the solar energy industry and for individuals and companies that purchase solar panels. The move sent shockwaves through the industry nationwide, pulling key incentives for major projects and residential rooftop solar alike. But in Illinois, members of the industry say state policy gives a bit of cover. While they are seeking a wave of business before Joe Biden-era tax breaks sunset, solar companies are left with uncertainty in the long term. Others fear Trump's actions will drive up prices by slowing the pace of renewables entering the market as fossil fuels exit for economic reasons. The spending plan that Trump signed into law on July 4th will end several decades-old tax incentive programs between now and 2027. Those programs, which offer credits for rooftop solar systems and investment in large-scale projects, were expanded under the Inflation Reduction Act, a major initiative of Biden. Trump followed the bill signing with a July 7th executive order aimed at quickly ending any subsidies for expensive and unreliable energy sources like wind and solar. Between the spending bill and the executive order, the federal government will also stop offering a tax credit for the manufacture of wind power components and instead offer a similar subsidy to the coal used in steel production. The new law also denies incentives to any project that are owned by certain foreign entities or use a significant amount of supplies from those entities, like the Chinese government and its affiliated businesses. This leaves many consumer advocates and energy experts looking to Illinois to further insulate the industry, which is a key part of how the state plans to replace fossil fuel-generated electricity with carbon-free sources by 2045, as required by state law. A separate analysis from think tank Energy Innovation, whose CEO was a senior Biden advisor involved in drafting climate change-related legislation, links the cost increases to a reduction in the number of renewable power plants that will be built under the new law. And I'm going to take a break now with our first half of the News Gazette. This is Lisa, and I will be back shortly.